Okay. Everybody ready for another round? Right. Here we go. Our next study that we have prepared here is one that I've tentatively entitled The Importance of Character. And we're going to look at a number of ways in which we can instill aspects of character into our children and opportunities that we can find in order to teach those. And I'm going to try to make this as practical and applicable in many ways. We've spent quite a bit of time so far in our last sessions together, really, as I said, building up our responsibility and the things that are set before us. And again, the roles that we have to play and many aspects of that. And now we want to look at some a little bit more detail in terms of some of the training that we're to do and some of the teaching that we're going to do in a practical sense. And like I said, we saw last month that our main goal in parenting, as we were looking at the goals of parenting, where we're going, is to bring our children to maturity. As you remember, we looked in Ephesians and we saw where, again, God speaks to us and he tells us to bring them up. And then bring them up means to bring them to maturity. And a mark, a principal mark of maturity is the issue of a good character. It is a mark of that. And when we speak of Christian character, we're really referring in many ways to moral and social excellence. And as children, or as Christians rather, we are called to a divine standard. And it's truly a higher standard. It's not the sense of a moral kind of middle ground that we find in so much of the mainstream of our society today. It is not in any way the aspects of moral relativism. You know, we're basically, you know, everybody's doing it, so I guess it's okay. You know, again, it is not that at all. It is a much higher standard that God has called us to. And to instill this higher standard into our children, it's going to require some action on our part. It's going to require that we communicate biblical values into them to produce that aspect of a good character. You know, so often the quality of our character and that of our children is determined by the presence, or I guess the absence, of three attributes. And that is these attributes of respect and honor and honesty. And our job of parents is really to take some of these intangible concepts, which may be intangible to our children, of some of these issues of respect and honor, and to make them tangible. And that's why during our time, the next hour or so, we want to look at some examples of some areas we can look for. In other words, there are opportunities that we have to look for those areas where we can teach these things and to instill these aspects of a good character into our children. You know, in our culture today, it seems as though accomplishments in life are given a great importance. And I think sometimes even too, as parents, we desire for our children to do well in so many areas that we too can put a lot of emphasis on accomplishments. You know, attaining good accomplishments in life, getting good educations, and these are all good things. Understand, accomplishments in life are good. They're very good. But accomplishments are far from the most important thing in life, in the sense that God is interested ultimately in character, and he's interested in it in and above any worldly accomplishments that we might attain. And it's these character issues of honor and respect and truthfulness that God really speaks to us a great deal about in his word, and we're going to see that more so as we go forth from here. And there are a number of foundational relationships that our children in many ways are exposed to every day. And sometimes we go right past them when we don't realize how often they are exposed to these different relationships and which we can apply these character issues that God has called us to instill in their lives, and we can teach it to them. We just have to acknowledge the fact that, oh, we're in one of those circumstances. Let me instruct them on the right way to handle this situation, the right way to behave in this situation. And the common relationships include a number of interactions. We're going to look at some of these. Interactions with positions of authority, or interactions with relationships our children have to you as parents, relationships to those that are aged or older, relationships to peers and siblings. And I know sometimes for people, they perk up, oh, I want to hear that one. I got peers, siblings, I want to hear that one. What do we do there? How about treatment of property that is owned by others? and the treatment of nature. These are really aspects of daily exposure. Our children are exposed to many things. There's hardly a day goes by that your children aren't exposed to some aspect of authority. They're exposed to you every day. They're exposed to their siblings all the time. They may be exposed to other adults every day. They're exposed to other people's property on a regular basis. And they're exposed to aspects of nature. And there's a number of character issues and we can implement as they're exposed to these different things. And the way we deal with these relationships that we just mentioned is really summed up in Philippians 2:3. We've got listed here. And really this is going to be kind of our text for a lot of this particular issue that we're dealing with. Philippians 2:3 says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others." Really comes down to is esteem for others. You know, there's so much about character that is really wrapped up in this aspect of other-centeredness. That's really what it's about. It's about esteeming others above yourself. This is what Jesus was about in his entire earthly ministry. If you really take a study of his earthly ministry, you're going to see that he was constantly looking at the welfare of those that are around him, meeting the needs of those that are around him, looking towards others, not for his own selfish needs or what he had for the time, but how he could serve those around him. He was the servant of all in all regards. And we are to have a proper attitude of respect and honor. And God calls us to instill these aspects into our children. So, you know, in a practical way, I want to look at some of these. And this first aspect in terms of available encounters in which we can develop character, I want to look at this aspect of respect for authority, because our children do come under authority on a regular basis. And the Bible commands that we are not, not only should our children respect you as their parent, but they are to give, as we're going to see here in Romans, that they are to give honor to whoever honor is due, which includes these areas of authority. And Paul speaks in Romans 13 about being in subjection to governing authorities. And if you want to follow on your handout, we're going to look at some of these passages again, because I want to keep us centered on what God says about these things. Romans 13, starting at verse 1, he says, "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves." Verse 5, "Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience." Verse 7, "Render, therefore, to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor." Peter discussed this well, and we see here in 1 Peter chapter 2, he deals with this, starting at verse 13. He says, "Submit yourself for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to command those or to commend those who do right." Verse 17, "Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king." You know, our children, as well as ourselves, are to really behave respectfully to all authority, whether it's a school teacher, or it's a babysitter, or if it's some type of governing official or a police officer, a church leader, whatever it might be, of a person that's in authority, they're to behave respectfully to that aspect of authority. And the one area that we've got to be careful in that we can fail at easily is that we've got to be careful that when our children complain about whatever authority it might be, whether it's a teacher, whatever the scenario, it's a police officer they had an encounter with, whatever it might be, especially in those early years when they are developing character traits, even if as they're complaining about it, we see their point. We see there is an inequity here. There's something wrong to it. We have to be careful not to speak ill of those that are in authority openly in front of our children, but rather it's important that we seek to try to resolve the situation, you know, to rectify it, but to do it without demeaning the position of authority, because God has called us here and he calls us to instill in our children that we have to have an honor to the aspects of authority. God has instituted many of those aspects of authority in our life, and he's saying we need to honor those things in that regard. There's ample biblical instruction in this area, as we've just seen. We've looked at a couple areas here in Romans and in 1 Peter. God does not really leave this as a gray area for us, you know, where there's just kind of, well, it's kind of up in the air. You can kind of just interpret the way you want. He really leaves it very clear that we are to honor those aspects of authority. And the question that commonly needs to be asked as we look at these things is, how do you respond to authority in front of your children? Now, how is it that you deal with those things? You know, and you've probably heard some of these examples before. If you see a sign, you're in a park somewhere where it says, keep off the grass, what do? Are you real respectful of the fact, oh, hey, we've got a sign here that says we can't go here, so even though it may not make a lot of sense to us, there's times where I've been places where I see a sign that's like, well, what is that all about? I don't understand. Why can't we just go across here or something? And I've had to check myself for a number of times, and we've had to walk all the way around it, even in my own sin. I'm thinking, well, I just don't understand. Why do I have to do this? You know, and I'm walking around the thing, but I'm doing it because I realize if I walk right across there and there's a sign, you know what your kids are doing. They're going to go, hey, Dad, look at what this sign says. It says we're not supposed to go through here, you know. We're not supposed to be on there. You know, you just go, forget the sign. Let's go through here. You know, that's what we don't want to do. Because what we are exampling, the fact that we're just going to disregard whatever authority is there. And we don't want this. And God is very clear that we are to respect those things. And we want to instill that into our children, where they're not one that just shines on all these kinds of things, even if we don't agree with it. You know, little things like littering laws and things like that. You know, when you give your children a piece of gum, what do you guys do with a wrapper? You know, we need to make sure we put it in our pocket. You know, we don't teach our kids, good, you got the wrapper, and it's flying in the wind somewhere. Or when we're done with gum, what do we do with it? Hopefully we're not teaching our kids to put it under tables, you know, or just to throw it down, you know. Because we need to teach them. There is aspect of it. You know, we want to dispose of this property. We'll take the wrapper back out of our pocket and put our gum in it and throw it away properly. You know, these are just examples of ways in which we want to make sure that we are exampling the right thing before our children, that we are instructing them by our example of our respect for it. Because the way that we respond to authority so often, as we've already looked at, you hear me say this over and over again because it's such a biblical truth, is how they're going to pattern their lives. They're going to pattern their lives again as how you respect authority yourself. And so much it involves just a higher biblical standard of this importance of others, or maybe it's, you've heard it expressed, the preciousness of others. It is such an important principle of all of character. It really is wrapped up in that issue alone. And many times we can undo a lot of our good teaching that we're doing. We're doing good instruction. We're doing it by our failed response to authority. You know, we want to teach them, you know, you need to obey the laws. You need to do the right thing. You need to be a good citizen. And then even if we think it's a little thing, when we disobey authority, we're showing a conflict in regard to that. If we're constantly living below this standard that we just talked about, the high standard that is set before us, not this middle ground that our society lives to so much, but if we live below the standard and we disregard even minor laws and ordinances, our children interpret that behavior as, you know, as that's the standard now. Oh, I see. Now the standard wasn't where I thought it was. It's here, you know. We obey the sign not to cut across this field if it makes sense, but if it doesn't make sense, well, forget it. We'll just do it anyway, you know. And that's what we don't want to do. Learning to honor authority, even adult authority, when our children are young, is so important because it prepares them for a number of things. It prepares them, first of all, for future adult responsibilities in the area of work. You know, your children are going to have a hard time honoring a boss if they've never been really taught and instructed in this aspect of honoring authority, because that boss in their workplace is the position of authority that they have to fall under. And there are some people, and you've worked with them, that just can't work under authority. I mean, they just, you know, they just can't have a boss because they just can't get along with them because they have difficulty submitting themselves under authority. But God's real clear, and that's why I hit the scripture references first, that we are to honor those things. We are to honor the king, that we are to submit to the authority that God has instilled in our society and in our surroundings. But they're going to have a hard time, even the areas of working, if they don't understand this aspect of submitting to authority. They're going to have a hard time in social relationships and being a good citizen in that regard as well. And to learn about honoring authority and those things will help them to respect God's authority. And ultimately, that's where we're going. Again, that my children would walk in truth. That's an area that's part of our goal at the end. If they can learn to submit to your authority and to the authority of adults around them, and they, you know, the area of authority in our life, they have a much easier time submitting themselves to God's authority and the authority of His Word, because they do have the self-control to put themselves in those positions because they've developed it as they've gone along, honoring authority. And I think that's why many times God has listed this on here, is because if we can submit ourselves to authority in that regard, we can more easily submit ourselves to His authority and the authority of His Word. Okay, well, let's move on. We have this aspect of authority, because this next one's a big one. And that is the relationships, the common daily relationships that your children have with you as their parents, in respecting you and in your position. Again, we talked about our roles and our position of parent and priest and legacy, but that aspect of parent is real important. And teaching our children to respect and honor us as parents is really basic in so many ways to teaching them to showing respect for others. And there's a very clear mandate that God gives us. And it's in His commandments. It's the fifth commandment. It's very clear. God made it clear. And I think it's before you. Exodus 20, verse 12. It says, honor, again, it's the terms of respecting, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. You know, unfortunately today, there is a lot of parents that underestimate, I think, the importance of this commandment, of the fifth commandment. A lot of times we look at it and go, yeah, that's Old Testament stuff. I'm on the New Testament side. You know, I don't live under the law. Well, it doesn't mean that the law is void. You know, it's just that we're not bound by it in that regard, that we're in an area of grace and we obey, though, that these are part of God's desire in our life. As many of you may know, under Jewish tradition, they consider the first five commandments of the ten as a duty to God. And the second five are duty to neighbor. And, you know, as you look at the commandments, you look through them, and you can really see how they do. They kind of line up that way. You know, we see all the aspect of, you know, the coveting and the stealing and all that sort of stuff. You know, it sits over this end and the duty to neighbor. And then there's stuff, you know, you shall love the Lord your God. You know, all these things that go down on this side. Okay, those are duty to God. But what's interesting is number five sits over here in the duty to God column. And number five is honor your mother and your father. It is recognized clearly, at least in Jewish tradition, that honoring parents is not just a duty to neighbor, but it's a duty to God. That's where God puts its importance, is on that end of it. And it's also interesting that this commandment to honor your father and your mother is so special that it's the only commandment, if you read through them, it's the only commandment that has attached to it a promise. The others don't have those promises attached to it, but this one does. The promise being that your days would be prolonged, which the Lord God has given you, if you would do these things. Well, likewise in Leviticus, again, as additional aspects here, we see Leviticus 19, verses 1 through 3, the Lord wants to speak through Moses here. And He tells him, I want you to speak to the people for me, and here's what I want you to say. And here it says here, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, and you shall say to them. In other words, He's saying, this is what I want you to tell them. I want you to deliver a message, and I want the message to be clear. Here's the message I have for my people. You shall be holy, for I, the Lord God, am holy. Oh, that sounds good. I mean, that sounds like something God would really want to communicate to the people. Be holy, because I'm holy. You're God, I am holy. But then He adds this. Every one of you shall reverence his mother and his father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. I look at this and I think, you know, it's interesting that when God wanted to deliver a message to the entire nation, He had a word for them that He wanted to speak to them about. He specifically included this statement, reverence your mother and your father. I find that very fascinating that He would include that as a primary message that He wanted to deliver to them. God also addresses those that abuse and dishonor parents, and it is not a favorable aspect to His regard, at least in terms of His in terms of His message that He gives here to those that would do these things. Again, here, Proverbs 30, verse 17, it says, the eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother, the ravens of the valley will pluck it out, and the young eagles will eat it. I mean, that's a little graphic for me, but I guess God wants to communicate something to us. He's basically saying, you know, If you're going to mock your father and scorn your mother, may the birds come down and pluck your eyes out. You know, I'm just going, whoa. You know, but I mean, he's being serious about what he feels about this particular issue. Exodus 21, verse 15, it says, "And he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." 17, "He who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Again, these are the issues of in the Old Testament, but we see that just as those who honored their father and the mother, that there was provided for them a promise of a blessing, those who dishonor them, we see associated with it a curse that's there. So we look at the Old Testament and we go, wow, that's pretty tough stuff. But what about the New Testament? Well, again, Paul addresses that in the New Testament. And then we can also look, you know, we've seen at other times we've been together in terms of some of the issues in Ephesians, where it speaks particularly to children and how they are to obey their parents. We'll be getting to that more. But I want to look here, too, in this area where Paul addresses those that dishonor as well and are disobedient to parents. In Romans 1, verse 28, it says, "And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, and disobedient to parents." You look at that list. I want you to look at that list of things that are in there. Some pretty nasty stuff in there. And yet disobedient to parents is sitting right in that list with it. That's how he looks at it. God associates with these people that he's listing here as the heathen, the lost. They are lost when they are involved in these kinds of activities, disobedient to parents being one of them. Again, in 2 Timothy, Paul writes, chapter 3, verse 1, it says, "But realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy." I look at that and I think, so in the last days, men are going to be boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient, ungrateful, unholy. It sounds like a familiar generation, you know. I mean, one locally, and I think of many things. Not just MTV generation, but, you know, I know I'm getting old because, you know, rappers are one of those things. There just seems to be, it describes me to them. Arrogant, revilers, disobedient, you know. They're basically dishonoring, unholy. I mean, just everything, to every aspect of authority and of parents and everything. They basically go after it all. It's just, these are the descriptions of things will be in the last days. Basically, what we see here is that it's a biblical warning. It's a biblical warning to us as parents, as guardians of our children, not to allow your children to mock your position as their guardian. You can't let them do that by just simply their impulsive thoughts and their words and their deeds. Because God's really clear on it that they are to honor you. And you are to bring them to that point of honoring you and not to be disrespectful in that regard. And we also know that our children will not automatically obey and respect and honor you. You know, they don't do that out of the womb. They don't come that way. They're not wired that way because we weren't either. It just doesn't work that way. These activities that we're talking about here really run contrary to their nature. And that's why they need to receive guidance and they need to receive training from you. We talked a great deal in our first month together about just the nature of man, the nature of our children. It's no different than our nature, and that they will go wayward and they will be disobedient and they will be dishonoring because it's part of the self-centered nature that's within us, and that we need to train them away from that and to honor you. And as parents, you are God's appointed governor for your children's souls. The very nature of a child really makes them really unfit to govern themselves, because we know they'll go wayward on their own, just as we would, because of the self-centered aspect. So the question really that we would ask is can their natural passions, that is their natural state, the natural way they are, can it bring them to holiness? Well, we know, of course it can't. We go the opposite direction. And the fifth commandment here specifically names fathers and mothers because you are the first governors in your children's life before they ever have an understanding of who God is. You know, our children are little. They can't really comprehend that aspect of God so much, you know, in a full sense. But they do know mom and dad. And you are the first aspects of authority, the first governors in their life. And that's why God is saying they've got to honor and respect you, because that will prepare them to honor and respect me. Because you're the first ones that they really experience in their life, and they come to this understanding with, it's you that's going to set the road for them so that when they develop to an age where they can understand who I am, that then they'll honor and respect me because they started with you, you see. And that's why, that's part of the reason why they are to do this. Well, what are some examples of disrespect by our children? You know, a lot of it, you know, we can look at it and it's not hard for us to figure this part out. You know, we know it when we hear it a lot of times. But certainly disrespect, or, you know, without honoring parents, is when they knowingly disobey, you know, direct commands or wishes that you make. You know, when you ask them to do something and they say, I'll do it when I get around to it. Okay? Now, that might not be, no, Dad, I'm not going to do it. It's a, yeah, I'll do it when I get around to it. That's dishonoring. Okay, that's about as blatant as it gets. That's to dishonor what you're asking them to do. That's a knowingly disrespectful thing. And we need to correct them away from that. Or when they grumble about parental decisions. You know, times if you ever hear kids say, oh, gee, that's a dumb idea. That sounds so boring. What a dumb idea. I don't want to do that. You know what? That's dishonoring. You know, you're their governors in life early on, and they shouldn't have that kind of expressed attitude. God is just saying you need to honor your parents. He's very clear about that. Or speaking in an irreverent manner with sarcasm or with a raised voice. You know, it's when you get those responses. It's just like, yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, hold your shirt. Don't have a cow. You know, sometimes kids will say those kinds of things. And that's when we say, whoa, wait a minute. You know what? That's not honoring, and I won't put up with that. You know, and it's not so much that you need to go through the whole thing of, let's get the scriptures out. God says you are to honor me. Do you understand? You're to honor me. You know, because then you put God in this position where they're like, God, what is it with this God? He makes me do this. No, the whole aspect is you just say, hey, I won't accept that. That is not the kind of attitude I will accept in this household. You will not speak that way to your mother or your father or anything in that regard. And we're to do that because God calls us to instruct them. You see, he's made it real clear. We see they're to honor you. And God says, here's what I think about those that dishonor their parents. He makes it real clear. I don't like this part of it. And so it's your job to set them straight in regard to this. Or they can show their disrespect by storming out of the house, slamming doors, even calling parents derogatory names, even if it's meant as kind of innocent and playful. I think is borderline. You know, things like, oh, Dad, you dummy. You know, we might think, oh, that's kind of playful and cute, but at the same time, it's borderline. Because we don't want to have the idea, it's like, you know, I'll have fun with you, but you don't call your dad dummy. You know, because it's just getting too close to stepping over the lines. It's not respectful. They need to keep that respectful aspect. And, you know, and I might be saying this to you, and you're going, gee, this is kind of hard line, isn't it? Well, you know, this is what God is saying about it in terms of respectful. And I don't think, you know, this is really all that much. We just need to correct them when they go there. Or children who yell for parents to come to them from the other room rather than going to their parents. In the back room, you know, just going, Mom! Mom! Get out of here! Just to say, you know what? You don't yell to me from the other room. If you want my attention, you come and talk to me face to face. Because, see, it's disrespectful. It's like, you know, you're my servant. Get in here. No, that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's an aspect of disrespect in that regard. Now there are situations, you got to understand, I'm going to be hitting you up on this more about context and everything. If it's an emergency, obviously that's totally different. If it's an emergency, my kids can yell from the top of their lungs if something's happening and they need help. A shelf is falling down on them and they need help. Then obviously, you know, those are exceptions to it. But if it's just they're just sitting in the room and they don't really feel like getting up and getting you, so I'm just going to scream for her from my room. You know, that's when we sit there and go, you know what? You know, even if your kids do that, you just go, you know what? We're not going to accept that anymore. You know, you know, you're going to come and talk to me. And you see, these are practical ways in which you're developing within them the idea of that, you know, I need to respect mom and dad and go get them. I need to think outside of my own realm. So that's why the whole thing really comes down to esteem for others and relationships to others. I need to go get them. I shouldn't expect them to have to come to me just because I'm the center of the world, you know, and they need to just come here. So that's the idea, is that we need to address those aspects of disrespect. Or maybe if it's just, you know, just giving, you know, back talk. Obviously, that's a little bit more clear. We understand that. You know, we say something to them and they snap back at you. Just go, whoa, wait a minute. You know what? You're not going to have that kind of tone of voice with me. And we need to make those corrections and say, it's unacceptable. I won't accept that kind of thing. Because they need to learn to respect you. God says they need to do it. Even if I've had some parents that say, well, I really don't care if they talk to me like that. You know what? You're doing them a great disservice. Because God says this is where they're supposed to be. And you're not taking them to that standard. So even if you don't care, God does. He cares, and he wants it the other way. So I say, if you allow this, you're not only, you know, operating outside of God's will, but our children will begin to develop an attitude that will make themselves obnoxious, to be honest with you. You know, even if you don't think it's a big deal, they'll be obnoxious to other people. They'll be obnoxious to their employers, and they'll limit themselves in future relationships because they feel like it's no big deal that if I speak to those that are in authority or speak to my parents in this manner or not show the proper respect. And the aspect we're going to talk about this more in our next session too, but really the respectful response in many ways, and especially in those early years, when it comes down to requests that you're making or times that you're talking to them, and particularly in those early years, it just needs to be, yes, mom, sure, dad, and not a lot of other explanations. Or there are times, you know, maybe when they get older where things, they'll say, you know, can I offer an alternative? You know, but sometimes, you know, our children will just want to get into a discussion with us and an argument with us over something. You know, it's like, no, you know what? We're not going there this time. I've asked you to do this. The respectful response is, sure, Mom, I'll take care of it. You see? And you tell them, sure, Mom, I'll take care of it. In fact, you know, Matt loves family stories. I'll give you one. And it'll be a real shocker to Matt because it's about Kelly. But it's, no, even a bad time. But, you know, she's much older now, obviously, but our kids have been, you know, trained up in the things that I'm speaking to you now. And it was just about a week ago or so, we were asking her about some things, and she was giving us a lot of explanations, giving us a lot of reasons, and going through all the things, a lot of stuff. And I was sitting next to her, and I just looked at her, and I said, yes, Mom. And she looked at me, and she started laughing, you know, because she knew. I mean, she knows these things. So she was just like, oh. Okay, and she knew she'd blown it, you know, for that regard. So she was laughing about it. She goes, okay, yes, Mom, you know, and not that, it wasn't so much an attitude, but she realized, I mean, she's 19 years old. Okay, so some might say, well, what are you, you're still instilling this at 19? Well, she still lives under my house. When she's out on her own, you know, that's different, but she's still under my covering, she's under my house, and, you know, there's still some aspects of it. But what was funny about it is when I said that to her, you know, she knew right now. She goes, oops, yeah, I know, I've kind of overstepped here, haven't I? I've gone a little too far, haven't I? Okay, yes, Mom. You know, she kind of laughed about it. She goes, oh, well, oops, you know. But, you know, but there are times where that is the appropriate response rather than a lot of other things that are going on. And, you know, Robin has had a different approach to this. You know, it's an effective one, but, you know, she basically tells them, you know, yes, Mom's fine, but it's better if it's, yes, Mom, most blessed and beautiful art thou among women. You know, it's a little bit long, but it works, you see, you know. It works, nonetheless. So they have to get that down real good each time. Yes, Mom. Most beautiful and blessed art thou. No. But what's not acceptable is why. Or how come. Right? How much do you get that? I need you to do this, I need you to go there. Why? How come? You know, at an early age, really, they don't really want to know why, to be honest with you. Most of them really don't. They don't want to know why. They don't want to know how come. They're just thinking, if I can enter into a debate with them, I can get them to change their mind. I can wear them down a little bit. If I can wear them down just enough, they'll change their mind on that thing. But really, it needs to be, no, it's not why. It's not how come. It's not, gee, what about this? What about that? It's going to be, yes, Mom, sure, Dad. You know, and really, it's not a hard thing to instill in your children. You say, you know, the right response is this. And you kind of say it. You know how did you say it? And you look at them, you nod your head. And you're expecting them, and you have them repeat it back. Have them repeat it back, because it starts to instill in them, okay, yes, Mom, you know, because it's the right response. It's a respectful response. We'll talk about this more as we deal with some of the obedience things. That, and again, this isn't my concept. I want you to understand, I'm not teaching you stuff that this is how I think it should be. I think God's word is real clear. This is what he's looking for. And when we get to the obedience stuff, it's real clear there too. This is what he wants. Asking for permission is also an area where there can be an important demonstration of respect. Again, we're talking about these character issues of respect and developing. And believe me, if you have kids that will listen to things and listen to instruction and they have the self-control, go, okay, sure, Mom. You know, you're around kids like that. You go, wow, that kid's really mature. Why? Because they have the self. Remember, we talked about our goal is to bring them to maturity, right? So, I mean, this is part of the things we're doing. And good character is part of maturity. And that's why these issues all relate to that. And asking permission for things is also an important aspect of that. Because a child who doesn't ask for permission but basically proceeds with their own plans is really exercising authority that they haven't been given, where they end up telling you what they're going to do rather than asking you. It's unacceptable. You know, basically you get the idea of say, hey, I'm going next door to play. I'm going to get a cookie. You know, and they're off to the kitchen to get it. You know, but especially at a young age, they need to ask you, may I go next door to play? May I have a cookie? We used to deal with this with our kids too. I mean, when they got tall enough, they could open the cupboard on their own. You know, they got tall enough, they could reach the snacks on their own. They didn't need us anymore. There were times we'd see them in there, you know, they just got their arm all the way down in a box. And even Rafa would say, well, wait a minute, did you ask for those? And they were like, you know, and then they got that look, they're like, you know, they got their hand just buried in a box somewhere. No, I haven't. And so, you know, you'd basically say, may I have some crackers? You know, of course, you know, their mouth is full of stuff. You know, may I have some crackers? You know, but, you know, and so those are opportunities where you come in and just say, you know, you need to ask for those things. As they get older, it does change and we see the responsible behavior. Because believe me, if you haven't been doing this early on, when it comes time for a real mealtime, they're not hungry because they're already full of other junk they've had all day long because they just help themselves. And you need to kind of know where they're at in terms of their what they're eating and those kinds of things. They need to ask you. And it's important for children to respect you in that regard and that they ask for things. And we just don't have it to where they're telling us what they're going to do all the time. And again, why should they respect you? Again, it's not because I think they should. It's because God commands it. If we don't do this, if we don't instill these things, you rob them of the blessing of the fifth commandment, the blessing that's associated with it. And we're to teach it, really. God is saying you're to teach these things and bring them to a point of respecting you in that regard and be obedient to you in that as well. And, you know, there are a lot of parents that spend their entire parenting years attempting to be friends with their children. And understand that the ultimate goal is friendship. And we've kind of talked about that before. We're trusting relationships and friendship. That's the end. But so often what many do, and I've seen this so often, they suspend obedience in those early years so that they can, thinking that I can cash in on my child's friendship. See, I can be their friend really early on if I don't really call them to things that they don't want to do. If I'll do that, then I can be their close friend right now, real early. And from a parenting perspective, you know, it absolutely sounds so noble, right? Just like, well, I'm just their good friend. You know, and a good friend is, you know, we're not on a different level. We're on the same lens and our level in that regard. And, you know, we just kind of whatever goes back and forth to be their good friend. It's like, you know, the courtship of Eddie's father. Maybe I'm too old for you. If you guys don't know, you know, let me tell you about my best friend, you know, that whole thing, you know, and in regard to that. But the reality is it right? Is it what God has called us to? And now, as I said, building friendship with our children is the ultimate relational goal. That's where we want to get, but it's not the starting point. It can't be. Because if you're just their friend, then they're free to do whatever they want, and really you have no authority then anymore. The authority is gone because a friend doesn't necessarily have authority over another friend, but a parent does in that regard. And we really need to be careful about how we approach that because we are called to a discipling relationship with our children, a discipling relationship, not a friendship early on, bringing them from that aspects of innocence and foolishness to maturity and wisdom. That's what our job is. And a friend can't bring another friend in that regard to maturity and wisdom. They're just going to hang out and let them do whatever they do. Because friendship, for particularly the young ones, is not the goal. or it is the goal ultimately, but it's not the starting point. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not the starting point for us. And I'm just going to share with you quickly, and this, you know, is not my own, but what others have, and there's been multiple people that have used the same kind of format of describing it. But, you know, many times our parenting can be split in terms of the years that go by almost in phases like that, in regard to the different phases we transition to as we transition from more of an authoritative type of relationship with our kids to a true friendship when we get to the end. And certainly in those early years, from the birth to, like, you know, the 5 years old or so, it is very much more of a discipline phase at that time, because they are so young and they are really without control at that point. And our position over our children is not to be oppressive. It's not an oppressive thing, but it is authoritative, because we do have authority and we do have that position over them. And it's in these early years, that's in the first 5 years, is where it's a phase of tight boundaries. You know, we tend to keep tighter boundaries, and we loosen those boundaries slowly as the years go by, as they show more responsible behavior, right? So we start out where they don't have a lot of control and they don't have a lot of wisdom what to do. So we keep it pretty tight, because otherwise they'll fly in over here where they shouldn't be and they'll get hurt, or there's other aspects that'll be destructive to them. But then as they show more responsible behavior, as they mature, people start with no boundaries at the beginning, and then the kids get crazy on them. And then they say, oh my gosh, my kid's out of control. And then they got people coming to them, you got to do something about your kids. You know, we just talked about that. And then they try to say, okay, let me pull boundaries in. And it's really hard, because your kids were used to this, and now you're doing this to them. And it can be done, but it's more of a fight. I mean, it can be done. And there's times where we have to say, you know what, we got to pull in the boundaries. How many times have we done that? If we said, we got to pull the boundaries in here, because it's getting out of control. And that does happen at times. But it's best if we start with tighter boundaries when they're young. And that's when they learn the aspect of self-control, where they learn those aspects of learning to say no to themselves that we talked about before. And this phase is the real early years. The first five are not so much the time of giving the reason for everything, because how are you going to reason with a 1.5-year-old? You know, let me tell you why you shouldn't do this. And your child's like, what? Yeah, they have no idea what you're talking about. It's just obedience at that point. You do it because I said you need to do it, you know, and it's more authoritative in that regard. But then as they move and they get older, you kind of move out of this kind of discipline phase, but more of a training phase for them, you know, where you're now at this point, you're educating their conscience and their mind. And since you're stocking the shelves, remember we talked about that, about stocking those shelves within their conscience of the things that they need to do. And you're giving, you know, the reasons behind your instructions in many ways, giving them wisdom as to the reasons why you think certain things should be done, and you're giving them wisdom for life. And again, I like the sports analogy, because it's much like at this phase, you're doing the drill. They're learning the fundamentals on how to live life. They're learning the fundamentals of character. They're learning the fundamentals on how they're supposed to be doing things. And you're able to stop the play at any time and go, whoa, wait a minute. You know, let's start over. Here's what we did wrong in terms of this play. And you just keep running the play until they start getting it down. They're running the drill. They're learning the drill in that regard. And then as they advance and they enter into those teen years, it becomes more of a coaching phase at that point. And that is, you know, you're not really in that discipline phase anymore. Because I'll be honest with you, you're not going to discipline a 15-year-old. You're not going to spank a 15-year-old. They're too big. They're past that now. You're not going to be able to do that. So now, hopefully, you're at a point where you're at a coaching part where, you know, our children, for the most part, are in the game. And the best you can do is send in plays and call time out and huddle up and give them suggestions on how they're going to go, because hopefully they've already got the foundation that you've given them in the training phase, in that drill that you did before. And we can come along and we can appeal to their conscience, and we can appeal to their walk with the Lord in terms of doing the right thing, because God has called you to do the right thing. And this is, again, where we talked about the trust relationships. The trust relationship is so important, because if our kids don't trust us, they're not going to take our advice. And this is the area where we end up having to give the advice. And then finally you get to the aspect of adulthood, and now you're in the friendship phase. So see, we do get there. We get to the goal of a friendship, but it doesn't start there. It starts really more of tight boundaries, and then as they become more responsible, that changes. Okay, the training process begins with tight boundaries. It begins with teaching respect and right character traits, as we have just mentioned. Let's look at another thing, though, another issue, and that is respect for age. We've looked at this respect for authority and respect for parents. What about the issue of respecting age? You know, in the past, children were taught to respect their elders. I know I was. You know, in the time that was impressed upon me, and that age was in many ways very much an honored institution. And today, though, it seems as though elderly people are barely tolerated. And you just wonder if tomorrow, how elderly people are going to be viewed. You know, what is really going to be in our future in regard to this? But what does the Bible say about it? That's what we really want to look at. What does it say about our view and our attitude towards the aged? Leviticus 19, if you'll follow along here, it says, verse 32, it says, "Rise in the presence of the aged, show respect for the elderly, and revere your God, for I am the Lord." Basically, it's saying here that when you're in the presence of an older person as a child, you should rise and you should honor them. And in doing so, you fear God. Because when you honor age, as it says here, you honor God. Again, let's look at some more. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 1. It says, "Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father." Job 12, verses 12 through 13. "Wisdom is with the aged man. With a long life is understanding. With him are wisdom and might. To him belong counsel and understanding." So we see the aspect that, you know, God is calling us and calling our children to respect those that are older. And so what are some practical ways? Because we're trying to find practicality in these different common relationships with authority, with parents, now with the older person. What are some practical ways we can develop character in our children, good character? I mean, how often have we seen where you see elderly people and they're trying to walk through an area and you got kids just blowing past them? And they're just like, you know, they're kind of like this because kids are just flying through the door around them. So, you know, really, that's a very unrespectful way to deal with it for dealing with other people. But it gives us an opportunity to teach our kids to say, you know what, that's not the way we should do this. The respectful thing is go open the door for them. You know, especially when they get strong enough that they can do that, it's just a courteous and proper thing to do for those that are older. And it's a practical way in which, you see, the idea is that we're not trying to make robots that open doors. We're trying to make our kids understand that, you know what, I need to be looking for the other people that are around me, conscious of those who are around me, and maybe I can open the door for that person. It'll make it easier, and it'll be orderly in the way that we move through this thing. And you know, it makes them, many times, kids that do that, they enjoy doing that, you know, and have the opportunity to do that. Or you teach your children of giving up a seat in the living room. If you have a big family function or you have a lot of people over and there's not enough seats for everyone, I mean, our children are young enough, they can easily sit on the floor. And we all know that as you get older, it's harder to get off the floor, you know. But for kids, they can bounce off the floor. So it's good just to say, hey, you know what, I need you to give up your seat for Grandma, or you need to give up your seat for, you know, Uncle Bill, or whatever it is, you know, and to say, you know what, he needs to have a place to seat. It's a practical way of getting them to start thinking, oh, yeah, I need to be thinking about those around me. I can sit on the floor. I'm young enough, I can get away. You know, I can do it. It's not a big deal for me. I don't find it uncomfortable. But Grandpa is going to find it uncomfortable. They either have to stand or sit on the floor. And when you start getting your children where they're aware of their surroundings, so that ultimately they get the point where you don't even have to tell them. They look and they go, oh, you know what? There's no seats. Hey, you want to sit in my seat here? Do you know what an incredible witness that is to people? It really is. And you'll just have people go, I can't believe your children. They offered my chair. I didn't mind standing, but I haven't seen kids do that in a long time now. You know, and it's not that you're raising your children so that people, you know, will go, wow, look what you've done. Because that's not our intent. Our intent is to make it to where they're aware of their surroundings and it gives them good character. If they're on a bus somewhere, you know, you're in an airport. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, you're in the airport sometimes. It's just packed. You know, you're in those areas waiting. You know, when your children say, you know what, I can stand or I can sit over here on the floor. So I'd be, dude, you want to have my seat? You know, that's a great aspect of really using the opportunity, using the situation to teach your children good character in that regard, teaching them to do it out of love for others and to do it out of love for God. Because as he says, as we honor God, as we honor the age, as we honor those that are older. Again, this is another situation, and I don't know how else to describe it other than how it was described, you know, initially when I learned it, and that was this issue of the interrupt rule. It's kind of a buzzword, but it describes a very important thing, and that's it provides a means by which our children can get your attention when you're involved in a conversation in a respectful manner, when you're in a conversation with other adults. And it's a way of showing respect again. It's a show of respecting those that are involved in it. You know, an example is that if you've ever been in a conversation with somebody, an adult conversation, and a child comes up and begins to yank on this person you're talking to. And they're yanking on their arm and they're hanging from them and they're trying to get their attention. And there's nothing crazier than talking to another adult that's like this. Well, yeah, I know what you mean. You know, and we were, you know, and you're just kind of like, you know, that's okay. You know, why don't you take care of that and I'll talk to you later. You know, I mean, when they're just climbing all over them to get their attention. And basically you're cut off in the conversation. And really this situation is a display of disrespect. It's a disrespect for their parent. It's a disrespect for the other person in the conversation, the other adult that's there. Because a demanding, kind of jerking child on mom or dad's arm, insisting, you know, that they have their immediate attention, is really disregarding the two adults, those who are of age, so to speak, in that conversation. And, you know, if you're allowing this, you're really, in essence, you're saying to the other adult, you know, is that, you know, I understand you're an adult, And you can wait because you're an adult, but you know my child can't wait. My child has no self-control, and my child is the center of the universe. So I need to cut off this conversation so I can deal with this situation. And you know, and that's not the position you want to be in. It should be a respectful kind of thing. And teaching our children how to properly interrupt is, again, like I say, it's a practical way of showing respect for other people and showing respect for the age. And it really just involves our children coming up and just simply putting their hand either on your side or your arm or something. But it's not an obnoxious thing at all. They put their hand on it. It really, without saying a word, it communicates to you, I need your attention when you have a break. I mean, you know, at least then you know, okay, they've got something going. They need my attention. But it's a very respectful way, and then you have a conversation, and when you realize there's just a pause in the conversation, you go, excuse me, just a minute, and you can turn, you can address the situation, and then they're off and doing their thing again. And again, I remember some people that I worked with a while back, and I just was talking to them about this thing, and some of the guys went home, and they said, you know, that was one of the greatest things I ever did for my kids. They said, not only has it worked really well in our family, but I've had so many people come in and go, gosh, that was really something. I was really impressed by that. And again, we're not doing this so that people are impressed, but we're doing it because it's a respectful thing. People get impressed by it because they don't see it much anymore. But it's a very, I think, practical way of our children basically, you know, and it's a great witness to show that I respect you, I respect you there, and I just need your attention when you have a break. Now, there's some people that will say, well, I've taught my children to say, excuse me. I don't really do that, but I say, just excuse me, you know, and I tell them that, you know, but that can work, but it can be really obnoxious, too, especially if you're trying to talk, and you got somebody go, excuse me, please, 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 excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, and you're just like, gosh, make them stop, you know, where, you know, again, if they just kind of just put their hand on, then Robin and I do it to each other all the time, especially if we're involved with something, she'll do it to me, I'll do it to her, we'll feel it. And so I just know she's got something to say here in a minute, or I've got something to say, but I'm not going to interrupt her to do it. But it, like I say, it's a way of communicating it, and it's just a great tool to communicate to your children to respect those that are around you. And again, we're trying to look at practicality. Again, in a similar way, you know, you've got to address some of the issues of shyness. It's something I've had to, you know, address and still address in some of our kids, especially our young one, because, I mean, they are shy. All of our kids were, well, except for maybe one. But all of them have been, all of them were pretty shy. And you know, shyness is one of those things that's kind of gray in the sense that it's, you know, it can be, it may not have any, it can kind of be a gray area at times, but it does have moral limits to it. You know, obviously if somebody addresses your child in some way and they don't respond, you know, it can seem rude, you know, as though they don't care when in reality they're just really shy. So we need to instruct our children, at least if someone says hi to you, you need to look them back and say, hi. I mean, it's not like I'm not asking you to carry on a 20-minute conversation. You just need to respond to it. Or if they compliment you in some way, you need to at least turn and say, thank you. You know, I mean, it's not that that's a hard thing to do or to impress upon our children. And, you know, what generally what we have to do is you have to just work on it at home. You know, in the sense that saying, okay, and usually it's that you're giving some discussion about this before you go somewhere. Okay, we're going to be going to this event and there's going to be a lot of people. And a lot of these people are going to come up and they're going to talk to you. These are good people. These are nice people. You don't have to be afraid of these people. But when they talk to you, I need you to at least respond to them and not just kind of look and then walk away. I said, because that's rude. It's not showing proper respect. You need to at least say, hello, you know. And I said, you know, I don't require very much from it, but doing those kind of discussions before you get there will really help, because at least it reminds them, okay, all right, I got it. I can take care of that, you know, and those are important things. And this issue of respect, I'm going to keep moving here so I don't go too long, is this issue of, and I think it's a great question it's posed, is whatever happened to Mr. and Mrs.? Because, you know, that's something that really has disappeared in a lot of ways in our society. You know, the social titles, really, they're social titles of respect. That's what they are. As children, younger ones address people as Mr., Mrs., and Sir, and Ma'am, Grandma, Grandpa, you know, with those certain titles that are associated with it. Because, you know, there are recent generations that, our generations, that have been willing to drop these titles and just basically disregard them. And I think in many ways, in the 60s particularly, and through the 70s, there was a push to eliminate a lot of authority in the family, and to basically make everybody equal. That is, mom and dad and the kids, and everybody's equal, and it's this concept of kind of democratic parenting, you know, teachers and students, there's really none that are above another, we're all kind of the same, and we all kind of have the same voice in that regard. And the idea was to reshape, you know, our country, but, you know, now that we're a few years on the other side of that, you know, I look back on it, and I look at the fruit of it, and I said, you know what? They just made the situation worse. It didn't reshape it for the better, but I think in many ways it reshaped it for the worse. I think respectful titles of Mr. and Mrs. allow our children to acknowledge that they're not on the same plane. They're not on the same plane because they don't have the kind of wisdom. They don't have the life experience that you have. They haven't been around as long as you have. They're still children. And it's a respectful way to deal or to talk with somebody. I mean, you got to ask yourself the question, does calling other adults by their first name, does it advance, really, the governing principle that we just saw here in Leviticus, in Leviticus 19? Does it advance it? No, I don't think it does at all by just using first names. I think, if anything, it takes away from it to a certain extent in terms of honoring those that are aged by just calling them Bill and they're 50 years older than they are and they're just little kids. And I think as a result of the approach, you know, we look at it and we ask, you know, do we have more or less social order between generations? Well, I would say I think we have less. And are the current youth generation, are they more compassionate and more respectful towards those that are older? I don't think so. At least not when I was going to school. I mean, we always had to be very respectful to our teachers. We never called teachers by their first names when I was in school. But yet that is becoming more common now where they do that. And then there are some, and as you've probably been there, there's some that'll say, you know, I really don't want your child to call me Mr. so-and-so or Mrs. because it makes me feel old, man. Can you just have them call me by the first name? And, you know, the reality is, compared to you or compared to them, you are old. And it's just a way to help instill in their lives the aspect of respect, you know. And, you know, and there's some that'll be real hardcore with it, and you just kind of have to deal with that. Sometimes you could talk with them, just say, you know, would you accept them to do this because I'm trying to teach them to respect those that are older. And it's a way of giving you a title that's different, you know, in that regard than just, you know, hey, it's Joe, you know, but to give them, you know, a real title in that regard. So you will encounter that as you try to instill this, but you know, just say, you know, you are old. I'm going to have, no, you really make friends that way. Okay, let's move on. Respect for siblings. This is one everybody's like, yeah, I want to hear about this one. How do I get my kids to respect their brothers and their sisters? You know, I tell you what, most of this is attitude. So much of it is about attitude. And it comes back to attitude of concern for those that are around us. It comes back to that principle we just saw in Philippians 2:3. About doing nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but in humility, let you regard each another just as more important than yourself. Or again, in Romans 12, don't pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. You know, practical suggestions for sibling issues. The bottom line is your children will have problems with each other. I mean, it just happens. But it's how you resolve. How do they resolve those situations? There's nobody here that's going to say, you know what, if you kind of follow some of these plans, your kids will never have arguments with each other. Yeah, they will. It is going to happen, but the issues are they respectful to one another? Do they resolve the situation with each other? Do they end up coming out of it, though, as friends? Because you know what? They need to know that they are each other's best friend. That's what we can communicate. Well, some practical ways we can do that. One of those is through the way that we model as parents. As parents, as a husband and wife, you know, our children need to see the friendship that we have. And again, if you're a single parent, you know, there are issues with that in terms of how you deal with other people, too, that are around you, you know, in terms of your friendships and how you work with that and how you work through those things. And they need to see how you restore in times of disagreement. You know, and as a husband and wife, there's going to be times where you're going to have arguments, but your children need to see that you restored and that you are back again and that you're able to resolve it. And even as single parents that are dealing with this, how you restore with friends and those around there, that they see, you know, there are times you have disagreement with them, but you know what, you have the ability to restore. It's a way of modeling how we need to do these things. And also, we can encourage our children to be happy when another sibling in the family, you know, does something that, you know, is worth praising over, does something wonderful. They win an award or they win a ball game or they do something. We need to encourage our other children to say, you know what, you need to go and just, you know, congratulate them. Tell them they did a great job and be excited for them. And there are times, sometimes our kids will just say, well, I really don't want to do that. I say, no, you will do that. It's important that you do that. This is your sister or this is your brother, and you guys are blood, okay? You're together. You are each other's best friends. You need to go and just basically, and even initially, that's sometimes what you need to do, is just say, I want you to go over there and just tell them how much, you know, earnestly tell them, I want you to speak to them in regard to, you know, how happy you are for them in these kind of regards in terms of cultivating an attitude of love for one another. It is important. And we need to continually remind them that they are each other's best friends. They truly are each other's best friends. And basically, when you're gone as their parent, you know what? Their siblings are all they're going to have. That's who's going to be left in terms of their best friends. Let's move on. Respect for property, rights of others. Respect for property rights is another facet of moral character. And again, there's a biblical principle for that. The laws that protect a man's right of ownership is really throughout the Old Testament, and including the Eighth Commandment. Again, Exodus 20:15, you shall not steal. The biblical principle here is simply this. You're not to steal another man's money or their possessions. You're not to steal from one another by defrauding, which means by cheating or by destruction of somebody else's property. And that is that we want to teach our children to respect property of others. And it begins so often by respecting these things within the home. So when our children are young, we need to instruct early on that there are certain household items that are off limits. You know, there are certain things, you know, whether it's TV knobs or little buttons or little knickknacks in the house. And believe me, you know, I've had people say to me before, well, my child has a hard time distinguishing between, you know, certain heirlooms and toys. They see them all the same. No way. I don't buy that. Kids know what toys are, and they know what little heirlooms are. They really do. They can look at something, they can see that's a toy, that's not. But it's a matter of instilling with them, you know the difference between the two. These are things you can play with. These are things you cannot. And even in the home, we start that. And when we visit our friends, we shouldn't need to rearrange their house and their living room by claiming that, you know, you've got too much stuff here that's a temptation for my child. You know, it just comes back to, you know, we need to respect the right and property of other people, that we don't go through, you know, like a whirlwind in somebody's house. We don't climb on their furniture, and we don't carry their cat around and do those kinds of things. Even if the person says, well, you know, I've been there, I've had them, they said, well, it's okay if they touch that. And you're looking at them, you know inside, they're going, I really don't want them to touch that, but I really don't want to be the bad guy right now, so it's okay. And, you know, you realize that's when you just say, you don't know. You know what? They're too young, they won't be careful enough. You know, you just say, no, you're not going to touch those things. You know, and I've been there when they've been carrying their animals around. They're like, well, yeah, it's okay. And you just see them, they're just watching all the time. You can see the look on their face, they're like, they're dying inside. Because they just don't want to be the ones to say, I really prefer they not touch my cat or carry their cat. You know, these are the things we need to teach our children. There are toys, those are fine. Things that aren't toys, we don't play with. And it's a part of a respect issue. Our instruction needs to be really motivated by responsibility of the respect of the property rights of other people. It's, again, it's this issue of character we can develop in them in these things that they do. And, you know, in the past, this was an expected standard. And the right to have, your property inappropriately handled or touched or dealt with by our children, you know, is really more important than allowing them to just express themselves. Because that's a real common thing now, too. It's like, well, you know, it's real important to let children just express themselves in their environment. And when my child's in your environment, there's just so much to express themselves with, you know. And you say, you know, no, that's baloney. There are toys and there are things they can do and things they shouldn't do. It's respect for you. You know, there seems to be a lot of concern over a child's freedom to touch and express themselves rather than instructing them what's morally right and wrong. And what is right is respecting what other people's property are, not to have their stuff messed with when they don't want it messed with. And it shouldn't be because you're not of appropriate age to be dealing with it. Again, the bottom line is it's not the object that we're really focused upon. It's not the object that we're trying to train to, but it's the owner of the object. See, it's respect not so much for the object. It's not respect for the vase as much as it's a respect for the owner of the vase. That this owner doesn't want your child messing with this thing because it's likely to break. So we're not respecting the vase, we're respecting the owner. And that's what we're trying to get in the other-centeredness, the focus upon the importance of others. Finally, this issue of nature that we can teach character through that. You know, obviously nature, like man, has inherent value because, again, it's part of the creation process that God did. And God treats his creation with integrity. And so we should, too, in that regard. But any act of respecting nature has got to include the awareness of others and the importance of others that are around you. Respecting nature in terms of considering those that are going to come when we leave. You know, they're going to come after us. And what have we left behind? That's what's important. And I think of the times that we go camping that, you know, and you've probably been there before where you see other kids in the area and they're basically, you know, defacing trees and they're hanging and ripping off branches and they just do a lot of needless destruction. I mean, there's really no rhyme or reason to it. You know, they're just over there with a bat and they're beating on something with it and they're just tearing it to pieces and you're going, what's all that about? You know, I mean, there's really no reason for it. There's not a need for it. Or you see, you know, kids that, you know, just go tramping through flower beds or they stripping leaves off branches of trees. And again, there is no reason for it. And in situations like that, we need to stop our children. We need to stop our children and, you know, and just say, you know what, you don't need to be doing this. And I know many times, you know, my wife's famous for this too. She's really good about that. She's just a trooper when it comes to stopping kids. There's times where I just kind of go, you got to be kidding me. You're going to go over to that crowd? That's a violent crowd over there. She'll go over there and go, hey! She'll get them to stop, you know, because they're over there just tearing something up. And, you know, and it works every time when she does it. But it's important, and it's important to intercede in that regard, teaching our kids not to litter, not only because there's a law aspect to it, but it's the moral principle. It's the moral principle that there are others that are going to come after us, and we need to make sure we have it suitable for them because we're thinking not just of the tree and so that the tree looks nice, but the aspect of those that come after us aren't going to want to come here where all the branches are ripped off and the leaves are all over the place and the tree looks ugly and the flower beds are trampled because we weren't thinking and we were just, you know, being wild at the time, you see. And this is an aspect of again, nature. And I know for our family, whenever we went camping or went to a picnic spot, the whole idea was before we left, we had to do a quick inspection and make sure everything was picked up. And it was just a way of teaching our children, not so much, you know, that it had to be that way, well, we wanted it that way, but just to teach them, okay, as a family, let's just make sure we got everything picked up before we go. I think times where, you know, we've been out, you know, we used to go shooting in the desert a lot. I taught my children how to shoot a long time ago because I've anyway, we used to go shooting in the desert a lot. We're out in the middle of nowhere. But the rule was, when we were all done, everybody had to police their brass. No one was allowed to have in their area any cartridge cases that were left behind because the whole idea was, and of course you could make it a game, okay, who could pick up the most stuff? You know, who has the most stuff when we're all done? But the idea was so that nothing was left out there that would be a distraction or, you know, anything else to somebody else that was going to come out there later, and it is an important thing. Let's conclude this, because again, I know it's been long. There's a lot that we're trying to cover, and that's why I'm kind of pushing through these things. There's so much to cover, and yet, really, we don't have that much time to do it. The conclusion is simply this, that Christ really is our ethical model. Ultimately, we're looking at how he lived his life and how he was other-centered and he was focused upon those that were around him and the needs of them. And even though we can't copy his perfection, and we're not going to copy his humility or his behavior in that regard, but again, all aspects of who he was motivated by the importance of those that were around him, the need to meet the needs of those that were around them, and the esteem of those. Again, the core of all character development, ultimately, as you can see, everything we've done is related to how does this affect those that are around me, whether I'm opening the door for them, offering my seat to them, cleaning up my picnic area for them, whatever it might be. You see, it's all motivated in that way. It's motivated to the person and not to the object. And I tell you, children with strong character are a joy to be around. They're a joy to be around because they are mature. They exhibit those mature qualities that are motivated by moral principle and the concern for those that are around them. And that's what we're to do. That's what God has called us to do. And I think clearly in his word, as we've looked through a number of these passages, it's what he wants to do for our children. Let's pray. Again, Lord, we thank you for the great wisdom that you provide for us in your word. And Lord, as we search for understanding and knowledge in how to deal with our children, you meet us in every way with the truth of your word. And yet we know that it is profitable for all things, including the training to righteousness. And Father, we just ask that you would just help us to retain these things that we have studied, and God, that we would just use them in a practical way. Find those opportunities in the lives of our children that we can teach these things and draw them closer to you and closer to what your desire is for them. Help us to be, Lord, just obedient in all aspects as a parent, as a guardian, and as a shepherd of our children. In Jesus' name, amen.